Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ben.
How are we doing? How are you doing?
Doing fine.
Good.
Yeah,
yes.
Doing good.
A bit sleepy, but I'm all right. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm also a bit tired. There was a risk that I think maybe it's just August. I mean, it'll be September by the time this episode is. In fact,
it's
it may
September
be September today.
September
the 1st when we're recording. August, we've not had the best track record of having all of us together in the same room for this podcast. Nearly happened again.
It very nearly happened again, but I'm feeling much better now. Thank you.
Good. We're all glad that you're okay.
We overindulged.
I've just realized I missed game night yesterday.
You did.
Good time.
It was really good one, actually.
Yeah. Did you play GeoGuessr?
No, we played Jackbox.
Is the Patreon exclusive reward game night.
Just thought I'd slide that in there.
And we...
so you know.
We introduced a new character to the world. Well, actually, two new characters to the world. We played a bit what was it called? Champed Up, which is like a drawing one where you can draw like a character and they have to fight against someone else. And Ben drew a character called Pretty Boy.
Pretty Boy!
And it was horrible.
I've got a photo of Pretty Boy.
It was real spooky.
I'd love to see Pretty Boy.
Yeah.
And then we had a second character that I don't know when the last time I played Jackbox was, but my name when I opened up the app was Tony Baboni.
Right.
I don't know why, but then we just started this like ongoing like accent that was just like the guy from the Callisto Protocol.
Yeah,
like, so, hey, I'm Tony Baboni.
Tony Baboni.
And we just were doing that for like the full 2 hours.
Such a rich tapestry we weaved.
Rich tapestry for the Babonis.
I missed out on all these origin stories. Yeah.
There's Pretty Boy.
Oh, Pretty Boy is horrible.
Isn't
he
pretty?
Horrible.
The scream by that artist.
Pretty Boy. Oh, is it me? You can't really see him on the camera. It's Pretty Boy.
Yeah.
He's the champion of spicing things up in the bedroom.
He is.
Oh, no, that's worse.
Oh, me? Did somebody call for Pretty Boy?
Yeah.
I've been to Victoria's Secret. Oh. So, yeah, that's Pretty Boy. And Tony Baboni, who is...
Tony Baboni.
Hey.
I'm making the Callisto Protocol here. He's probably going to show up again, I think, at some point. If we were doing predictions, we were saying yesterday, Tony Baboni would almost certainly be Ashton would be replaced with if she lost.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah, predictions. Yeah.
Brian Bumpus, Dick Munchenko,
and
Tony Baboni.
Tony Baboni.
Would you have to talk like that? I mean, I didn't have to... I mean, when I say I didn't, I mean Brian Bumpus have to talk in a Brian Butterfield voice because he just used his normal voice.
Maybe
as
just
did Dick.
When Tony Baboni introduces
Tony
himself,
Tony just,
that's
hi.
That's it.
Yeah.
I am Tony Baboni. And then you talk.
Yeah.
But anyway, we can't do those anymore because E3 is dead, which brings us nicely back onto the fact that this is a video game podcast where we talk about video game things. And each and every week, we're sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor. He's laughing. I don't know why he's laughing because this is really serious.
I'm laughing at the notion that Mrs. Baboni had a baby and thought, what should I call it? Tony.
Tony
it's
Baboni.
Actually Anthony, but he goes by Tony.
Right, okay.
What was it? Anthony Boba Nathan.
Yeah, okay.
Someone suggested the English version.
Sorry, let's continue.
Serious. This is because it brings in money, which allows us to do this. Peter's got the ad read in front of him. Currently,
a game has come out that's being just absolutely slated for its because it just doesn't stack up next to Grand Theft Auto.
Oh man!
You know, in Grand Theft Auto, there's that mini game where you can like decorate a bedroom, and he can do it really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, just super fast. There's that new game that's come out, and in comparison, it's rubbish. Paint slow? No thanks.
It's just not as good as,
no, no, it's just not as
GTA,
good.
Is it?
It's getting like sort of high 60s on Metacritic. Yeah.
Is it woke?
Yeah, it's really woke.
What's woke about the paint slow game?
It's sort of a colorblind game in the sense that I don't see color. Right. I just see paint. I see the paint deep down inside.
That makes me really cross.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even explain how. I'm going
to. Do you know what that says to me? That says there was a pink hair in the writing room.
Oh.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, I nearly swore. Wow. That makes me really mad that paint slow is like that.
Don't be mad, though.
Why?
Because it's not real.
Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, thank God.
I'm still going to be really cross, though.
Yeah. Those bloody pink hair in the writing room.
I'm not familiar with that phrase, but I instantly understand everything about it.
I heard it for the first time yesterday, right. And I was like, what?
Oh, it's bad, isn't it?
It's so bad. Yeah. Anyway, we're not sponsored by Paint Slow.
No.
We're sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com. Patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1, you can support this podcast and ask questions and all sorts of other stuff as well. We've got loads of other tiers, all that kind of whiz-whaz and wallocks. I'm glad we got the Saints Row Woke stuff out of the way at the start so that people who are upset about the fact that it doesn't make us really cross can just go now. And then we can continue the rest of the podcast with you guys.
Yeah.
We've got a question here, haven't we, Peter?
Yep, it's from Callum Story, who says, "Hey, Bap, currently enjoying a Renegade run of Mass Effect Legendary Edition, but still find myself choosing occasional Paragon options as the alternative makes me feel too bad. Do you enjoy playing the baddie in games, or do you prefer the goody two-shoes route every time?" Thank you, Callum.
Thank you, Callum.
Thank you, Callum.
I'm a goody, like, almost all the time games. I really struggle to be bad. I've never, ever, I don't think I've ever harvested a little sister in Bioshock, and I played that game a lot. I think I did it once because I needed to capture some footage or something, or, you know, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I've harvested little sister once and thought, oh, that's weird, a slug comes out. Don't like that.
Mm.
But never done it on a at home chilling, playing the game kind of run. I always pretty much do the right thing in the likes of Fallout and Oblivion. Sometimes you don't have a choice. It's like, you know, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. But if it's, you know, do you kill this person or do you help them? I always help them. And that's even with me playing as, I really like being a thief in Elder Scrolls games and Fallout games, I guess. But I really enjoy joining the Thieves Guild and stuff. And in that sense, I guess you could say that I'm a baddie. But even within the realms of being a thief, I tend to be a little bit sort of Robin Hood. And I'm like, I only steal from rich houses and then I'll like give coins to beggars and things like that. So even when I'm playing a bad person, or, you know, breaking the law, then I'll tend to still kind of be good ultimately. So, yeah, I think on Dishonored, I didn't, you know, there was always the option to not kill the person. You could like have them sent away to work down a mine or something, which sounds equally horrible. But I think I did tend to go for the kills in that rather than the non-lethal option. That's probably maybe the only time I've been bad. But that almost feels like the vanilla default route, and like anything else is a bit of a deviation.
In video games, it's often easier to kill than it is to know how to go for the pacifist route. Like you have to really know the game inside and out.
Yeah,
it's very rare that you can. It's not like you're presented with a choice of kill or spare. That doesn't happen very often.
Really.
It's more, you know, you have to find out some secrets.
Ashton?
I also play the goodie most of the time. Like when I played Cyberpunk recently, I had all non-lethal weapons, so people wouldn't die. They'd just be knocked unconscious.
Right.
And I would always give money to the homeless people that were around. I'd just give them quick five eddies. But like, yeah, I don't really like being a bad boy because it makes me feel bad. I don't like that. I'd like to feel happy when I'm playing a game and be like, wow, I'm a good guy. I'm saving this city from all these terrible corporations. I am the good guy.
Yeah.
I don't want people to like play the game and feel like I'm the bad guy. But I do kind of sometimes wish that like I just did. Like yeah, sometimes I'm like, it would be so much easier if I just was the bad guy. Like I could just go in, just not even talk to anyone, just kick them.
Yeah, with your fist.
With my fist.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't see my foot. So I was going to say kick their ass, but then I stopped myself, but then I say it anyway, so whatever. So yeah, I feel like sometimes I'm just like, man, it would be so much easier just to be the bad guy and just go in guns blazing all the time and just not care what anyone thinks about me and be the bad guy. But I feel bad. I have my conscience streams too far into video games where I'm like, I simply can't. What if they think I'm the bad guy? These NPCs that are not real.
Yeah.
So I always play the good guy as well. So.
I'm the same. It's not nice to play the bad options a lot of the time. I have done it before, specifically for trophies and like new playthroughs and various things where there's an evil option or a good option. But usually I will... What's the middle? What is the middle? Is that the gray option?
Yeah, like neutral. Yeah, just completely neutral.
I often end up in sort of neutral ground, say in Mass Effect, rather than true good or true evil. I've never gone true evil in Mass Effect, but I have gone true good. In fact, I must have done for trophies. Anyway, I usually, in a normal playthrough, when I played through the Legendary Edition or Collection or whatever it was called last year, I ended up sort of in the middle because there are several moments where the Paragon option the Renegade option is really cool, which is just like sort of Han Solo-esque, like just shoot the baddie in the face while he's talking.
Right.
You know, Paragon in... I mean, I think it varies game to game. In Mass Effect, Paragon tends to be do everything by the books, not just do the right thing. Mm. So there are some options sometimes, like a journalist who's smearing your good name, who you can just punch in the face while she's trying to like talk trash to you. You can just punch her. And that happens, I think, in every single one of the games. There's just, you bump into her and there's an option to just, the Renegade option, just to deck her because she's saying that you're, you know, some sort of evil entity, which sort of proves her point, but is also very funny and really good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it varies, but it's, yeah, I don't want to be a dick in games.
No. I do get a little bit mob mentality though when it comes to like playing games together. Like when we play the odd like Wales Interactive game, it does get a bit mob mentality of being like, do the bad thing.
Yeah, when we're playing together.
Oh, do that silly thing. And I'm like, oh, this is what they do experiments on. Like,
yeah, it really is.
When it I play really it myself, is. I'm like, no, I don't want to hurt anyone. But everyone's like, kill them all.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
It's like that meme, my escapist power fantasy is being nice to everyone.
Mm.
don't want the pretend people to be cross with me.
Yeah. I do sometimes, and maybe this counts as the sort of gray area, I might choose a bad option, quote unquote, to kind of deliver retribution to someone who's clearly been a dick in the game.
Yeah.
So like on paper, the good option might be to sort of forgive and forget sort of thing. But like if I can beat up or maybe even kill someone who is, you know, he's a slave trader or, you know, he's just sold his child to someone or whatever it is, then I might do that.
It also depends on the quality and the of the writing in the game. As Dusk Falls, which I spoke about on the podcast, which really fell apart at the end, definitely had probably what they considered to be a good path where there was some forgiveness going on. And I was still very much in the mentality and mindset that I was for the entire final few chapters, which was, why are you trying to make these guys sympathetic?
Mm.
As soon as I was able to call the police, I did. Like, you know, you can call them if you want. It's fine. I'll understand. It's like, yeah, I'm going to call them. Yeah. I've just sat through 5 hours of this game where you've been awful. Why on earth would I choose to forgive you? You've shown no remorse. Like, there's no redeeming your character. So, yeah. It depends on the quality of the game as well. Sometimes they will present you with the good option when really just doesn't make sense to pick it.
Even in like games like Horizon, where it's not even a good or a bad option, it's just like, do you want to be nice, be smart, or be like forceful? And I'm like, well, I'll be nice. Like, I don't want to be mean. Because all the time it's like, get over it. And I'm like, I wouldn't say, Ayla wouldn't say that.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't know as well. Like, yeah. It'll just give like a 3-word summary. Mm.
Telltale's really bad.
And they'll suddenly go, flip you.
You're like,
whoa.
Huh?
Come on.
Yeah. That was the nice option. What are you talking about? Yeah.
Also, Ashton, if you're worried about the NPCs thinking you're the baddie, you wouldn't do well with the Fable games. I don't know if it how much they continued it through the series, but I remember in Fable 1, if you did bad stuff and like the worse you got, you would eventually like start growing horns and there'd be like flies buzzing around your head all the time.
God.
Whereas if you were good, your skin would glow white. And like if you were like right at the far end, you know, most people probably were somewhere in the middle, but like if you went
with horns,
evil,
but also glowing.
Yeah, exactly. Like your skin would go like pallid and you'd grow a big pair of horns and stuff.
Mass Effect was a similar thing, except without the horns.
Right.
Sort of just get your skin goes all white. Yeah. You've got like red scars on your face and stuff.
Mm.
I do like the games that make you make difficult decisions where you can't be the good guy all the time, like The Walking Dead Season 1, where you are frequently thrust into situations where you have to choose the lesser of two evils, or whatever your interpretation is, depending on your relationship with the characters and the things you've experienced and the decisions you've made already. I think those are really interesting games, and I wish there were more like those, where it wasn't just a case of this option for good, this option for bad.
Yeah.
You know, this is a terrible thing that's happening, and you can't save everyone. What are you going to do?
Because
you're going to be the villain in someone's eyes, and I think that's interesting, and I like to see that in games. It's time to move on to a section that I'm glad you're here for, Peter, because we nearly did it without you.
Oh, right.
We've never done it before. Ashton, what's it called? Sorry.
It's called What We Play In.
Mm-hmm. It's What We Play In time. Time to talk about what we've been playing. Peter Austin, what have you been playing?
What
have you been playing?
I've continued to play Pac-Man World Repack. I am basically doing what I typically do with new games that I'm streaming, is I'm playing two runs at the same time in parallel. So let's see when this goes out. So there are a couple of levels that I've played at home that I've not played on stream. There's one level I've played on stream that I've not played at home, because you can go to different warp rooms at different times.
Right.
I say warp rooms, it's just an island with different areas and doors in it. But yeah, but I'm still really enjoying it. I've made it to the creepy circus area on both stream and at home.
Oh, you were talking about that last week.
Yeah, so that was one of the levels that the only reason I'm familiar with this game is that I had a demo for it, and the demo featured the first level in the game, which had all these little signposts telling you how to play the game. It was, you know, tutorial level almost. And then it just had this other one that was a circusy level, and I played both of those levels all the time. I used to boot up this demo disc all the time. And then when I came to actually play the game for the first time, this remake, I was really surprised that the circus level was like 50% of the way through the game. It's really strange to have just lifted that from the midpoint of the game and dropped it into the demo. But anyway, I'm there now. It's creepy, but I'm enjoying it. I've also, in a similar vein, been playing... I've gone back to do a little bit more of Klonoa, because there are... collectible things. I'm not sure exactly what they're supposed to be. You're sort of rescuing creatures or something. I don't understand the story to that that game. But in each level, there are hidden creatures that you have to save. And I've just decided to go back and I'm not going for like a trophy or anything, but I just thought, oh yeah, well, there'll be probably some little offshoots that I've not explored, or puzzles that I never got around to doing. So I guess I was just in the mood for, like, Pac-Man's already got me in the mood for doing a bit of platforming and stuff. So I was like, why not go back and just mop up Klonoa a little bit? So that's just Klonoa 1, though. I've not gone back to the second one yet, because didn't enjoy that one as much, in a way. A bit of a double Bandai Namco remake week for me. They've been busy, those boys and girls. Ashton?
So I moved out of my flat this week, which didn't give me a lot of time to play games. However, I still found the time to play a little bit of Lego Island 2, Brickster's Revenge. The PlayStation 2 game. Because I played it on a PC when I was little. It's like one of the only games, if not the first game I think I ever played when I was thinking about it. And my boyfriend was up helping me pack, and he had a little like It was called a Retroid Pocket, which is like a little emulator console thing. And he's big into just like breaking things and just installing a bunch of stuff on it. So he installed Lego Island 2 and he was like, oh, look, isn't this the game that you were talking about? And it was. So I spent the evenings when we didn't have a TV because it was unplugged and the PlayStation was in a box and the PC was in storage on this little console playing Lego Island 2. And he was like, do you want to like watch a movie? And I'm like, no, please, I'm playing Lego Island 2. You wouldn't mind.
Please.
The Brickster is loose.
The Brickster is getting his revenge. Man, this game's so weird. There's so many bits. I'm like, this game is just odd. So there was this one bit where Brickster was, you just like were looking at the sky and he came in and he was so tiny for like ages. And then he finally came into view of being above you. And just like flying, holding two Mama and Papa of the pizzeria by their feet, just like in the air, and then just drops them and says, these belong to me now, picks them back up by their feet and just flies off again into the sky. And I was like, I don't remember this being this weird. But I think when I was younger, I had like, I thought this game looked so much better than it did. Now I'm playing it again.
The first one was really weird and also looks a lot worse than you remember.
Yeah.
Kind of surrealist almost.
Yeah. So it is definitely weird. But I got like 70-80% of the way through the game. And then Ben took the console back to Leicester with him. No. So I have to wait until I see him again to play it.
So you packed up all your stuff and he didn't leave the console.
Well,
with
I have
you.
The Switch.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I didn't take the Retroid with me. He kept that. Because that's literally the only game I wanted to play. He was like, I've got so many games now. I was like, I just want to play Lego Island 2. I don't know what you're talking about. But I also played a little bit more Tony Hawk's Pro
Tony
Scooter. Tony Baboni's Pro Scooteronis. Mm-hmm. Because we were home over the weekend for a friend's birthday. We had a couple of hours before we had to go. So we were playing Horse and Tag, I think, because they're only available in split screen. And I actually went out loud, I hate this game. This game's rubbish. I'm not playing it anymore because I was just so bad at it and I kept falling off. And he was playing these games and he's really good at it. And he was like, haha, you've got Horse. And I was like, yeah, but I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know. I don't understand. Like, I don't know why I keep falling on my ass.
You've got a horse.
You've got a horse.
To be fair, you do have a horse position
about
that.
I was really good at tag, but I was really bad at everything else. Mm-hmm. I was like, can we just play tag again? Because I'm really bad at everything else. But yeah, I don't want to play that game again. I'm just bad at it, and I don't know how to get better about it. Like, it doesn't feel like it's teaching me anymore. It's just like, you've had
just
the
it.
Basic
just
tutorial.
Skate.
Just skate now.
Skate.
Do it. Do the 900.
You wouldn't want to be a horse, would you?
No. And I do keep being a horse. So
So all of your stuff is in storage.
Yep.
I know you've got the Switch currently.
Yeah.
And how long is that stuff in storage?
Indefinite amount of time.
Okay.
Maybe 2 weeks, maybe four. Who knows?
Who
Not
knows?
Me.
Okay. Cool.
I don't. I'm waiting to hear back from an estate agent when I can move into the house. And even then, I'm not going to have any furniture. So I'm just going to sit on my beanbag.
Yeah.
I'm going to sleep
with
on my
TV on the floor.
Bed with my TV on the floor.
That sounds kind of cool.
No
actually.
Internet. And
it's going to be like a real, real hang pad.
Yeah. Real bachelor pad I'm going to have. So, yeah.
So your what we play in for the next few weeks may well just be Switch games.
May well, yeah.
Yeah.
Or be nothing because I'll just be sat staring at the ceiling. But I am staying with Owen of Cultaholic and his wonderful girlfriend and they've made me feel very welcome. So maybe he'll let me play on his PlayStation.
Yeah, possibly.
Owen, can I please play on the PlayStation?
It's homework. It's homework, Owen.
Yeah. So get ready for the next few weeks of just Switch games.
There's stuff on Switch.
There is. There's a lot. There is stuff that I need to go back and play.
You've got
and
loads
I never
to
finished,
play. You'll
so.
Be all right. Mario
Rabbids. You like that game?
Yeah, I need to finish that game. That is first on my list, to be fair.
Nice. I played some Warzone, which I haven't played for a long time because I uninstalled it because I didn't like it anymore. My friends and I finally managed to all be online at the same time and available. So we thought, let's play a game together. Why don't we play Warzone as a throwback? Played, I think, two games of it. The first one was like a resurgence battle royale, so you come back after a certain amount of time, if your teammates are still alive, and that time gets reduced if they get any kills and stuff like that. That was, it's sure is the same as it was. I got a couple of kills, which was nice. And then I got killed by a man in solid gold armor.
Right.
And then miraculously, we ended up winning the game because one of my friends hasn't stopped playing it. And spectating him play the final moments made me so angry. Because if I was playing against this man using the tactics he was using, all the like jumping and sliding and going prone and all, oh man, it's just a different game now.
Yeah,
I can't compete. So that was fine. Then we played a little bit of golf with your friends, which of course is a real favorite. There's a new map.
Is there?
It's premium. You have to pay for it.
All right.
But it's really fun. It's Bouncy Castle one, and it basically feels like a big
Bouncy Castle.
Bouncy Castle?
Trampoline.
No, not trampoline.
Water slide.
No! Stop. Fall Guys. It feels like a big Fall Guys level. It's all very colourful, and the music is like deranged clown circus music. Mm-hmm. It's
circus flavours.
Circus flavoured, yeah.
Circus flavoured, sorry, yeah. Circus flavours. I love my job. I also played a little bit of Dark Souls 2 last night outside of the stream because I was just going around and mopping up a couple of like optional side things. And it's quite cool being massively overpowered and going down routes from earlier in the game that you couldn't access before and not having to worry about dying.
Mm.
Found some cool stuff. Found a great hat. That was nice.
Nice.
Like a proper like Robin Hood hunter's hat, really long
that.
With a little feather in it and stuff. Mm. It's great, really good. The main thing, obviously, that I've been playing is Saints Row. And, oh boy, it's so janky. It sure is a game. I'm not going to talk to the wokeness or lack thereof of it because that's an exhausting conversation. But fundamentally, as a game, it's pretty flipping broken.
Has your opinion changed slightly on it?
My opinion has changed in the sense that they haven't fixed anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's inexcusable. But it is like... The bugs that I've been having have been so funny.
Yeah.
I shared one on Twitter that I urge you to go and look at. It's the final showdown between you and the boss, and this guy's entire torso dislocates from his hips and just starts like...
He A-poses first.
Then his entire torso extends like a Stretch Armstrong, and he just like... spasms around like a Catherine wheel really fast, and then it goes woo and like snaps back into place. It's incredible.
When watching that clip, I thought someone should make a game where this happens regularly.
Yeah, intentionally. Yeah. That was honestly, these moments were helping me get through the game because I've been in like a really sort of brain dead, mind empty, sort of I just want to play something kind of mood recently. And Saints Row has been perfect for that, which is a criticism in a way, obviously, because it is very vanilla, paint by numbers, open world, sandbox kind of thing. But these bugs have been so welcome. I went to kick someone who was on a bike and they just like shot off at a million miles an hour into space. I got set on fire by someone throwing a Molotov and then A-posed aggressively at them for a second. And then I went back to being able to play. Just like really stupid stuff. And I have now finished it. I've been leaving my console on because you generate background income. And the final optional thing that you can do after you finish the game is build a Saints Row or a Saints skyscraper. But it costs like 8 million in-game dollary dues. And I'm glad that I did because I had just over 8 million dollary dues. And as much as there is to do in the open world, and there's flipping tons of just busy work in there, again, which isn't very inspired, I was trying to work out if I wanted to maybe go for the platinum or like see this game all the way through, not in terms of the story, because I've done that, but in terms of all the side stuff and collectibles and things. And some of the trophies are, they're just silly. Just do literally everything kind of trophies. And I just can't be asked. Mm. I need to get back to Cyberpunk anyway. But I did stick with it long enough to build my big skyscraper. And now I've decided that I've had enough. And I think I will stream it at some point as well because the character creator is great and there's a good Barbara in there and I'd like to stream that. But I am done with Saints Row and my final word on it is wait. Just if you're remotely interested, wait for a price drop for it to be included in Game Pass or PS Plus, or but mainly for the bugs to be fixed. Because in its current state, it's a very inoffensive game that doesn't have a great deal going for it. And when you compare it to GTA, it's definitely not going to stack up. But I still enjoyed it. People are making out like this is the worst thing that's ever happened. And it isn't. But it's still not very good. But I had a decent enough time with it. I enjoyed it enough to see it through to the end. And if you like Saints Row or are remotely interested, I would suggest waiting a while before giving it a go. But that's it. Saints Row. I've completed it, mate. Done.
Completed it, mate.
That's what I've been playing.
I think it's time for question two now. It comes from David Lever. Hey, Pab. I'm going to make Pab stick. Given the recent mess showing from a lot of gaming events, with little info on the big upcoming releases, your Spider-Mans, your Zeldas, how long is too long to hear nothing about a game? I'm starved for Breath of the Wild 2 news, and I'm sure Nintendo could show something if they wanted, but equally I understand they need to control hype and manage publicity. Best wishes, David.
Very quickly, at the time of recording on Thursday, I saw that there is a quote-unquote Zelda blowout coming soon, potentially in the form of a Direct.
Yeah, is that right?
I don't know if that's confirmed or not.
Didn't Nintendo not accidentally release that they were having a Direct this month? Everything that happened at the Direct, and it was like went out like a week earlier than it was supposed to. I don't think like they left off very long, but it was like... Oh, the Direct is happening at some point soon, I think. Right. So.
Okay. Well, I've heard, I think VGC tweeted that there's going to be a big Zelda blowout soon. There may be Breath of the Wild and Switch ports for some of the older Zelda games. So you may well get your stuff soon, very soon. Anyway, Peter.
I think, and we've talked about this before, games are probably announced too early now with nothing... you know, generally, well, not generally, but often games are announced so early that barely any development has happened at all. They might just be in pre-production. And at that point, you're just almost not setting yourself up for failure, because ultimately, when the game finally comes out, you'll probably be able to build that hype back up again and get things going. But it's difficult to... maintain that hype over a very long period of time when you don't have stuff you can show, and in the interim you do end up with frustrated fans. So personally, I think the best way to do things is the way that some games still do, some publishers, developers still do, which is to secretly be working on a game, and then when there's like only a year to go, and they know that there's a year to go and they're not going to have to push it more than a couple of months or whatever, that's maybe when you start drip feeding bits of information and little teaser trailers, and then bigger and bigger trailers, start doing interviews and releasing 15 minute gameplay segments on IGN or whatever. That's probably the way to do it. And even if it means we're waiting exactly the same amount of time, in some ways, it's better not to like give us that initial little, oh, look, this game's coming, how exciting, and then, you know, have another 5 years to wait with nothing.
We've said it before, but like in that instance, you don't know that you're waiting.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You're just like, something might happen, but, you know, you're not, it's not in your mind that this game could happen. It's just that like, yeah, maybe I'd like this game.
Yeah, you'd probably be thinking like, oh, I'm really hoping they'll do a Breath of the Wild 2, but maybe they won't, whatever, you know, we'll see. Whereas if they say, no, we are, but then you still have to wait the same amount of time, then that's worse in a way than just kind of having a question mark. Because in a way, it's more exciting when something isn't confirmed. And if any like little accidental bit of information happens where some shop accidentally lists a product that they shouldn't be listing or whatever, that's a bit more like, oh, and that's intriguing. You don't get mad at like a publisher for keeping things back from you. But yeah, once they've said, no, this is happening, and then you have to wait, and there's just occasional little bits of news, then that's more frustrating. So I didn't answer the question exactly. I said, how long is too long to hear nothing about a game? But I don't know, I think that's the issue. And how long is too long? I don't know. I think ultimately it depends on when it was announced in the first place, I would say.
I mean, obviously, we got the news about Spider-Man and we got a teaser trailer for Wolverine and the KOTOR remake at the Game Awards last year, which was, what, now 10? No, 9 months ago now? Almost 10 months ago
November.
Now?
November.
Yeah.
No, it was the 9th of December, wasn't it? Or something like that. So, I don't know.
She knows.
She's right.
Some early she is December. Right. So, yeah, like 9, 10 months ago now. And it's like, we've not heard anything from the vast majority of the games that we saw announced.
Apart from KOTOR, which,
it
was bad news.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, I don't know, like some of them I'd forgotten about like by this point. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I remember when that was announced. But most of them, I'm just like, there's so many other things that are happening and other announcements that we had like in the last few weeks, or lack of announcements, I should say, that I'm kind of like, well, I'm the hype has died down for me now because I have forgotten that these were even announced. But I do think the issue is less about announcing them to the consumer and generating hype, and more about announcing them to potential stock buyers who now may buy stock in your company because they know that you're working on a game that will sell well, which means that your stock will go up, which means that you, the company, will make more money, which is why a lot of these companies will announce things, because they want people like that, their stock to go up and people to invest in their company. So that is kind of annoying, because that means that us consumers are like waiting for ages and ages for them to put a game out. But I don't know how long is too long, because I think it, like you say, it depends on the game. But also it kind of like, when it's such something like this, you kind of just have to wait and like kind of forget about it, remove it from your mind for a while, because you know that it's not coming for a while. Like the Spider-Man was, what, 2024, we were told, potentially?
I'm not sure.
Which is like, you know, at the time, 3 years away. Mm. So there's no rush on that. And we don't need to be like, oh, when's it coming? When's it coming? Because we know it's not going to come for at least another 2 years. And maybe we'll hear some more about it next year. So, you know, it's a long time to wait, is 12 months. But in the grand scheme of things, hey, it's actually not that long. So,
yeah,
you know, there isn't really an answer, like black and white answer, but it's just, it's hard knowing that a game's coming, but not knowing anything about it or when's it coming. So,
yeah.
I
completely agree with Peter. I think it's less of an issue about how long you're waiting between things being shown or spoken about, and more a case of things being announced way too early. Delays happen, and obviously there's been COVID and a lot of things have changed and thrown things off trajectory. It's why so many games were delayed out of this year even. But you've just got to stop announcing games more than a year and a half before you think they're ready to go. Because otherwise it's just too long. You can't announce a game and then go radio silent for 2 years. It can be rough for fans to know that a game is coming and then for nothing to be shown for over a year. That's really hard. Like God of War Ragnarok was announced when the PS5 was first shown off in 2020. And we have seen so little of it even now. I know there's a big Game Informer cover thing and there's some more gameplay out, and we've had a couple of trailers, and the hype machine is very much rolling now for its release later this year. But they've shown comparably nothing. Compared to the first game, they've shown almost nothing. In the same sort of time period, it felt like we saw a lot of the original God of War. It was announced with a sort of gameplay trailer, even if that vertical slice was manufactured for E3 that year. It just shouldn't be announced so early. That's the main issue. And I do feel for Breath of the Wild fans, because it does feel like it has been years and years since that game was shown or announced with a trailer, and that there's been nothing going on. It's rough for fans, but stop announcing things so early. Mm. You gotta stop.
It'll probably make people like us less frustrated at your sort of opening night lives and your quote unquote E3s, because if you announce, say, God of War 3 years ahead or 4 years ahead, then for every event that happens after that point, there will be people thinking, oh, I might see God of War at last. It might happen. And then it doesn't, because they're not ready. And then that just increases that frustration. Whereas if games were sort of shown off a year or so ahead of their release, then by definition, you would always have like significant stuff to show at every one of these events, because every year there's going to be some kind of significant game release. Therefore, like every year going back from that, there's always going to be like something interesting to show. But yeah, the problem is that once the idea is seeded that such and such a game is out there, then you're always hoping to see it. And when it doesn't show up, it's massively disappointing.
But it's funny because I feel the reverse of that for like Callisto Protocol. Like every time it's shown
there is a case of showing too much.
Man, yeah. I've seen so much of this game.
Gotham Knights as well.
Just, yeah, I feel... Because it's like, always there. We know that it's not going to come for at least another few months now. So that means that there's potentially at least maybe two other shows that it could be in before we actually see the game. And I'm like, gang, I've seen so much of this game. If anything, if you show me more, I'm going
to
be less inclined to buy it.
Where it's like, you know, a trailer releases on social media or whatever. And you're like, I don't want to, I'm not looking at that. I've already seen, I know I'm going to get this game or I'm not going to get this game. You sort of make your mind up after three trailers or whatever it is. And then, you don't want to see any more.
But it feels like Callisto Protocol announced their game ages ago. And then since then, every time we've seen, hey, I'm Callisto Protocol. And then it's like, cool. And then is, you know, a bit more gameplay. We watch the guy die in a gruesome manner again. And then it's like, cool, see you in 3 months for the next conferences. But
you want to see another death?
You want to see him die again?
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Well, it's time to move on to something rather strange.
Sorry.
Ow.
Sorry.
It's called Weird News.
Weird News.
Weird News.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. Remember, you can submit your weird video game news in the weekly post that goes out on Facebook and Twitter, apart from this week, when it didn't. We will shout you out if we pick your news. Not this week, though.
Yeah, sorry.
Also, Weird News is sponsored by our podcast producers. If you go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump and support us at a certain tier, you too can become a podcast producer and get a shout out right here. Peter, do you want to start?
We've got Nathan.
G.Y. Goliath.
Sean Legg.
Corey Duffel.
Robin Wardle.
Ellie Nicholas.
Erica Hutchinson.
Melody L. Bonet.
Katie Jarrod.
And Gabrielle Philipping.
Fantastic.
Thank you, podcast producers.
Thank you, podcast producers. Thank you very, very much. Peter, what's your weird gaming news?
I have found a weird news on Kotaku.
Ooh.
It's written by Ethan Gach, who is the sort of second or third in command of weird news at Kotaku.
Mm-hmm.
Fortnite TikTok creator explains how he used DBZ, that's Dragon Ball Z, to troll the internet.
Did you say DBZ, that's Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah, joking.
Good.
Anime fans' recent rage bait was engineered to troll them, is the subheading.
Good.
If you were online at all last week and following the Fortnite/Dragon Ball crossover event, the odds are pretty good you may have come across someone losing it at an apparent Zoomer mispronouncing Goku's iconic attack. Now you have to forgive me because I have no knowledge of Dragon Ball Z and I will probably accidentally mispronounce this, but here we go. So this is a quote from him. So we all know Kamayamama is overpowered, creator Dagwummy said in his August the 18th video. It spread like wildfire. Pretty soon, everyone from Ninja to Goku's real-life voice actor had weighed in. Most then quickly moved on. If they hadn't, they'd have realized they'd been trolled. I had noticed that a bunch of Fortnite creators had been mispronouncing the name Dagwummy, told Kotaku in a phone interview. And so the night before I made that video, I was just thinking, if everyone else is saying it wrong, it'd be funny to sort of add on that, both because I knew some people would actually kind of take the bait and there would be some funny comments. He was right. There is then his tweet, or no, someone else has taken a video of him mispronouncing it and tweeted saying, I'm crying. Why did he say Kamehameha?
Isn't it Kamehameha?
Is it? Kamehameha.
I think okay. So.
Kamehameha, isn't it?
Kamehameha.
So this is it. Why did he say Kamehameha?
I think it's Kamehameha.
Why did he say Kamehameha?
I don't know enough about Dragon Ball Z.
I don't know anything about Dragon Ball Z.
To weigh in.
But here we go. Play.
Is he going to be loud?
New Dragon Ball Mythic in Fortnite, 10 times stronger. So we all know the Kamehameha is over...
Kamehameha.
The video ended up nailing that social media sweet spot of making people angry about someone being wrong in an extremely specific and nerdy kind of way. Dagwummy also confessed to never having ever watched any of the original anime. He said he went with a yo mama pun because it was one he'd used occasionally in the past, and despite recording several different takes with different ways of mispronouncing the phrase, ended up sticking with that version. It apparently took him 20 to 30 minutes to nail the perfectly dry and straight-faced intonation. If anything, the fact the pun was so corny and made no sense helped make it that much more believable as a genuine mistake. Anyone familiar with this channel would have heard him pronounce Kamehameha correctly just the previous day, but in the context-destroying world of the internet, it became perfect bait, especially since there's already a cultural subtext that young people playing Fortnite have no idea where the branded crossover characters they play as originally came from. Dagwummy has 630,000 subscribers and filler.
Must be nice.
While some Dragon Ball fans raged in TikTok duets, others simply tried to add their own dunks. The Come Hey Ha Mama, wrote Ninja. Shaking my head, responded KSI. Even the English dub voice of Goku, Sean Schemmel, reacted, tweeting, The Kamehameha is Kami's mama? ?
Wow. What a dunk. Got him.
I'm so tired of internet.
There's more. But basically, come on your mama is Goku's new attack. How exciting.
Cool.
Ashton.
I have some news.
Kamehameha.
I think so.
That's worse.
But that might be wrong.
It should be come on your mama.
Look, the anime fans are going to come after you.
They are.
And that's fine. I'm okay with
that. If only they'll come after me, because I said that that's how I think it's actually pronounced.
Yeah, at least I own the fact that I've got no idea how to say it.
Well, you just said it should be Kamehameha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're part of the problem.
Look at that Zoomer over there being part of the problem.
Okay, Zoomer.
I have some news. My boyfriend sent it to me, and it's from timeextension.com.
Ooh. I know that one. I can explain what time extension is. It's not important though.
Do you want to or you don't want to?
It's the new.
I was like, I know what that is, and no one cares. Shut up. So I'm
you
not
don't
want
say. To talk
I can,
about it.
I can say, but I don't think anyone's going
to
care.
Only if you want to.
No, I don't really want to. No.
Okay.
I'm over it. I've moved past it.
It's written by Jack Yarwood. Original stars cast reunite to promote new Resident Evil fan film. In the subheading, Itchy Tasty.
Oh, Itchy Tasty.
Three of the original cast members of the live-action opening of Resident Evil have reunited for the first time since shooting the iconic intro.
Wow. Was it the dog?
No, it wasn't the dog. The dog's probably dead now, Peter.
Oh, it probably is.
The dog is 36.
It's probably undead now,
yeah,
I think.
The video of the reunion, hosted on the Residents of Evil YouTube channel, featured Eric Pyrius, who played Albert Wesker, Charles Kraslavsky, who played Chris Redfield, and Greg Smith, who played Barry Burton, talking about their experience filming the original Resident Evil opening in Japan and is part of a promotional campaign for a Resident Evil fan film. The film, called The Keeper's Diary, brings to life one of the most memorable moments of the original Resident Evil, about a person undergoing the horrifying transformation into a zombie thanks to their exposure to the T-virus.
Sounds like a horrible film.
Mm. Mm. It's been directed by Resident Evil superfan and filmmaker Andrew Saulo, and will star the original Chris Redfield, Charles Kraslavski in the role of the keeper. According to Salo, the desire to start working on the fan film emerged from seeing the various attempts from bigger production companies to adapt Resident Evil into a live action.
Yeah, that went well.
Have you seen they've cancelled the show?
Yes, I have.
It all came up. All came about after Welcome to Raccoon City. I don't want to rip on anyone's work or anything like that, but the movie kind of lit a fire up underneath my butt, and I was like, okay, I have to do something. So I sent both Charlie and Eric a message online to see if they wanted to play the keeper, and I didn't think I was going to get a response from either of them, but both of them actually replied. So I was like, wow. But we ended up going with Charlie, and Charlie's very passionate about the subject. Kraslavski tells us, there was part of me that was hoping that someone would contact me for a project like this. I was just really, really impressed with the storyboard itself, and I think that was the main thing. It just looked so beautiful, and I was like, wow, this guy knows what he's doing. And I did a little background on Andrew and looked into some of the stuff he's done. The trailer for The Keeper, a biohazard story, was released last month, also on the Residents of Evil YouTube channel, and we have to say, it looks surprisingly well done. It features Kraslavski reading from the keeper's diary over a quick time lapse of the character deteriorating mental state. According to Kraslavski, he hadn't ever actually played the game, spending much of his youth playing Star Fox 64 instead. So this brought some challenges to taking on the role. Luckily, however, Saulo was on hand to supply him with necessary context. So they're making a new film, and it stars the guy who played the original Chris Redfield.
As the keeper.
Mm.
That's cool.
Weird.
I've
got weird news that I found all by myself.
Good for you.
Thank you. It's from PC Gamer, written by Andy Chalk. And the headline is, Bethesda forced Arkane to call its game Prey, which studio founder says was very, very hurtful.
I think gross is the word he used.
In one of the other headlines.
Well, should I even read it? You guys know what it is already.
It's okay, Ben.
Okay, I just saw it on Twitter the other day. It's all right. It's fine.
The other day, seriously?
Well, not the other day.
I was going to say this was published 13 hours ago.
Yeah, so no.
PC Gamer, last night. right on time with it.
When I say the other day.
Raphael Colantonio. Yeah, is that him? Colantonio said nobody at Arkane wanted to use the title, but Bethesda gave it no choice, which is part of why he left. Oh. I like Arkane's 2017 immersive sim Prey a lot, even more than I liked Human Head's 2006 FPS of the same name, which, for the record, I liked quite a lot too. But I was always baffled by the decision to reuse the title. Developer Arkane was explicit that its game was not a sequel or a remake and had no tie with the original, and it's not as though the 2006 game was such a smash hit that it carried immutable PR value. It was a fairly widespread point of confusion. In fact, not just among gamers, but also at Arkane. In fact, studio founder Raphael Colantonio, who left Arkane in 2017, said in a recent Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences interview that Bethesda's insistence on using the name was very, very hurtful and ultimately helped convince him that it was time to go. I did not want to call this game Prey or Prey 2, Colantonio said. I had to say I wanted to anyway in front of journalists, which is not my pleasure. I hate to lie, and those are sales lies. It's not like a personal lie or whatever, but it still felt bad that I had to support a message I did not want. Not only me, but nobody in the team wanted to call this game Prey or Prey 2. Our game had nothing to do with Prey or Prey 2. I'm grateful that a company will give me the means to make a game and trust my ability with so many millions of dollars. I'm grateful of that. But there is a bit of the artistic, creative side that is insulted when you tell this artist your game is going to be called Prey or Prey 2. You go like, I don't think that it should. I think it's a mistake. It's a sales mistake, just like a sales lie. Because we're going to get the backfires from the original Prey fans. These ones are not going to be happy. Then the ones who didn't like Prey, they're not even going to look for our game, and they're not going to find our game.
Mm-hmm.
It continues like that, basically. So that was part of, I got to go at this point because I'm not in control of my own boat at this point. So there we are. That is the news there. The confusingly titled Prey.
Or Prey 2.
They didn't even want it to be called Prey.
Well, that makes me slightly happier in a way, because I've always thought that's really stupid
that
they called it that.
Why would... Why would Bethesda insist? Because they were making a Prey game that got cancelled, weren't they?
I don't know if that was that it was Bethesda? With Bethesda at that point. It may have been. But yeah, the actual Prey 2 was being made. And that was a really cool looking CGI trailer.
Like a Blade Runner with aliens.
Yeah, there was like, I think you were like a bounty hunter or something. There was a guy chasing this alien criminal over this sort of futuristic city. And then that just never happened.
Do you reckon they like already had the domain and they were like, oh man, we need to use this.
We've spent $100.
We filed the copyright. We can't go back on it now.
Just a very strange decision. Yeah. I don't know.
But like the article says, it's not like Prey had that much kind of power behind cachet. It as a brand name. Yeah.
Just thought that was particularly weird.
I'm trying to find the thing that I saw. Oh yeah. So there was Kotaku tweeted 12 hours ago. Prey director says he felt gross using that name, was forced to by Bethesda.
Tweet I saw.
Yeah. So it must have just not put that bit in the
article. Or maybe it was further down. I didn't read the full article, which will be in the link dump if you want to read it yourself. It's time for question three. We're on it today.
I was just thinking about that spider up there that's been there.
Oh, yeah, it's not moved.
It's been there like 2 weeks or a week. I did exactly the same thing I did last week, which is to get the very last few drops out. I went all the way.
Should I zoom in on the camera?
And then I could see.
Should I show people?
Could do if you want.
Let me show the spider. Do you want to start reading question three?
I'll read the question. If you're listening on the audio version of the podcast, sucks to be you. There's a spider in here and you're not going to see it. We've got a question here from Captain_Cone, who says, hi, Bap, been following you guys since the What Culture days, the latest podcast was something special for me. Last year, I graduated and started in the games industry, and now some of my favorite creators have talked about something I've worked on. The game grew up to be Albert Einstein. No, wait, Dead Island 2. So my question to you, as one of, I'm sure, many devs that listen to your show, what triple jump Easter egg would you like to find in a game, and what game? Additionally, what's your favorite gaming Easter egg of all time? Thanks for all the good work over the years, Alex P.S. I hope you like the game when it comes out. We've given it everything we've got.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, Alex. I'm really sorry that we sort of kind of crapped all over Dead Island 2 a little bit.
But hey, we haven't actually played it, so maybe we'll really like it.
We've not.
Can we call the spider Dead Island 2 spider?
Yeah.
Should I poke it with something?
Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see if it's alive.
I don't want to pull down my sleeve. Oh, well.
Maybe just blow on it.
Probably do
gently.
A warning for people who don't like spiders. It's a bit late now.
It's been on the screen for ages.
Don't use the special hat.
Don't poke it. Just blow it.
Ashton never used the rules boss hat.
There, it moved. Is that as sharp as you can get it?
Yeah. It's really hard to zoom in because it just focuses on the wrong part of the white screen.
I don't think it's alive.
Is manual focus not on?
It is, but when I go to focus, it does that and I don't know where the spider's gone.
Oh, I see. Right, I get you.
I don't think Dead Island 2 the spider is alive.
No, I think Dead Island 2 the spider is dead.
Nah, it's alive.
No, it's not because it's not moving when I'm blowing on it. Are you going to poke it?
What are you going to do to it?
I don't want to like be mean to it, but I think it's alive. Can I touch its leg? Yes, look, it's reacting to me. Can you see it?
Oh, there it goes.
How is it? Oh.
I don't mind spiders like that at all. That's why I didn't want to disturb it. And then I just got up and like wafted right in its bed.
I'm going to bug this animal.
Yeah. Right. It's fine. It's settled down again. He or she is absolutely fine. I guess statistically more likely to be a she this time of year.
I guess.
Because they eat the boys. Well, it's maybe a bit early for that. For spider sex.
There we are.
There we are.
Thanks.
I think we're back. Well, what a fun little tour we just did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Alex.
Don't worry, Captain Cone, Alex.
We do still have answers to your question.
We all read the question before the podcast, so it's not like...
Yeah, we know what's going on.
Ashton weren't paying attention.
No, you say that, but I did actually forget half of the question, so... As in, like, to answer that after having pre-read it.
Yes.
I forgot that it went on to the next page, and so I haven't talked about what my favourite Easter egg of all time is. So I'm having a think about that now.
Okay. Well... I struggle to think of my favorite Easter egg of all time. It's one of those things where it's like, I'm sure there'll be one that I really love that for some reason isn't coming to my mind, but I will get to some in a minute. In terms of a triple jump Easter egg, I think it's a bit, it would be a bit, I don't know, pretentious to be like, I think the three of us should be in a game. Although we have been in a game.
We have been in a game, yeah, confirmed.
We have, yeah.
But for me, I think I would be more comfortable with a triple jump Easter egg being like a pink walrus in a game somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe it could be like an unlockable animal with a cheat code in like Project Zoo or something. Mm. I assume you can probably get walruses already. And then if you press like, if you open the console and type in lot better parent or something and then hit enter, all of the walruses turn pink and it changes the word walrus to Billy Ray walrus or something like that.
That would be amazing.
That would be good.
So yeah, pink walrus, or maybe just a tiny little hidden pink walrus, like an actual Billy Ray walrus in like, in a dilapidated bedroom in The Last of Us or something like that. That could be fun. In terms of favorite Easter eggs, like I say, there'll be definitely Easter eggs that I love more than this, but ones that just came to mind. I got one immediately, which I believe is statistically, like, it doesn't happen super often, but for me, almost the first thing that the merchant said to me in Resident Evil Village was, "What are you buying?" I had a friend who used to say that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was fun. But yeah, apparently it's a bit rare for him to say that. And also another fairly recent one, in the Spyro Reignited trilogy, there are a couple of different character animations that have Wumpa Fruit in them, which is quite nice. So, in Spyro 1, there's these, wizard guys who are feeding these big animals and they're throwing Wumpa Fruit into their mouths. And then in Spyro 2, there are these lemurs that in the original game used to just throw sort of coconuts at you, but they now throw Wumpa Fruit. That's fun.
Hmm.
And then in a sort of reciprocal manner, in Crash 4, there were a couple of Spyro Easter eggs as well. In fact, there were three. There was one right at the start. When you're on the beach, there's a little Spyro rubber ring floating around in the water.
Bless you.
Bless you.
Thanks.
Then there's a very obvious one that's not even an Easter egg, where you're at this big carnival and a giant Spyro balloon goes past. and then in the concept art book for Crash 4, there's a big sort of futuristic city level, and there's loads of like ads and like neon signs and stuff all over the city. And it didn't make it to the game, but in the concept art, there's this big picture that someone had drawn, and like way down in the bottom, you can see that there's an ad for Spyro 4. And unfortunately, we don't have Spyro 4 yet, but it was like, you know... It's like a little tease saying it'll happen, but it's not happened yet.
We want it.
So those ones obviously kind of appeal very much to, you know, the things that I'm a fan of. But there'll be more out there, I'm sure. Psycho Mantis is a good one. If that counts, you know, the whole mechanic of like what's on your memory card. And I don't know if that's an Easter egg. Probably not really. But
no, it's part of the game. Still very cool though.
Yeah. Ashton?
It doesn't really count as an Easter egg because it's kind of part of the whole game. But I really like in what's the new one? Astro's Playroom? Is that the new one? I really like how there was all those little homages to like all the PlayStation games. As you were playing the game, there was like a little Aloy climbing up a mountain, and then there was like a little Kratos and Atreus Astrobot on a boat.
They're sort of Easter eggs in a way. Yeah. There's like a billion of them, so they feel less like Easter eggs, but they still sort of count.
When I first like was playing the game, when I was encountering the first few, I was like, "Oh, this is so good!" And then there was just so many. I was like, "I know what that is. Hey, I know. I figured this one out." So I really like that, and I also just really like when games will just like call back to their old games, like in Control, the like whole Alan Wake DLC. Obviously, it's not an Easter egg, but it's just like a callback.
Mm.
Which isn't so obviously Alan Wake when you're playing it, but then you're like, hey, I think I recognize this.
Mm.
And I just like that kind of thing. But in terms of Easter eggs that we could be in, I didn't think about being, humble. I thought we could be in a game. Either three similarly dressed skeletons around a hob. Or we're main menu dressed zombies. There's like three of us with our like apron and the hats on.
The red jumper.
Yeah, red jumper, like coming out of a house with like
you are the meal,
a knife, and you're the meal. Mm. Yeah,
and it says Mr. Happy's place.
Yeah, Mr. Happy's house.
I like that. That's good.
Oh, that could be quite fun. So, because no one else would know. No. But if you were a fan of the channel, you'd be like, hey, look at those. That's cool. They'd just be like, there's some three chefs over there, but it's not. Mm. It's us.
It's slightly less self-important if, like, you're not instantly recognizable as you.
Yeah.
Like, if it was, like, the three of us doing a snippet of podcast, if you, like, tune the radio or something, that's a bit like, okay.
Jeff Keighley and Death Stranding.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Jeff Keighley.
Yeah.
But, like, skeletons or zombies is you know, it's more like, you have to know what it is to get it.
Mm. Firstly, congratulations on your work on Dead Island 2.
Yes.
Sorry we weren't overflowing with enthusiasm, but I hope it's good and I hope you've enjoyed working on it.
Mm.
In terms of an Easter egg that I have enjoyed, I also managed to miss this in the question. Borderlands 2 has some great Easter eggs. There's an entire cave that looks just like a Minecraft cave.
Yeah.
It's got
creepers
in it and stuff. And you unlock
a
head skin that's just a block head, like Steve. There's also, if you run out into this poison lake, there's a little island with a sort of a big twisting tree and some ruins and a couple of knights on it. I think one of them's like called Rolaire or something like that. And there's a little fireplace with a sword sticking out of it. And it's a little Dark Souls Easter egg. There's one of those in The Witcher 3 as well, under a sort of like a rope bridge down. There's a little hollowed out area, and then there's a sword sticking out of a bonfire. Nice little Dark Souls reference.
You've reminded me of one of my favorite.
There's one in Horizon Forbidden West. Mm. There's a few actually that are God of War themed. Mm. There's one that you can find like an axe, like Kratos' axe in a tree, and there's little statuettes that are like the two dwarves, and then one of Atreus and one of Kratos that you can like find in the map, which is quite fun. Mm.
Talking of under bridges, there's that one in Oblivion where there's like a troll. If you walk along, it like spawns it in. There's a troll face down in the water under a bridge. And if you search his person, he's got a note on his in his inventory and written in like really broken English. It just says, me worst troll ever, me get drunk and kill self. He's just jumped off the saddest bridge.
Troll.
Yeah. Oh. Who decided, do you know what this game needs?
A sad troll.
Yeah.
In terms of ways we could be featured in an Easter egg, the pink walrus is an obvious one. I think that would work really well, just even as a little stuffed toy in a cupboard or something. Or, because we've done a lot of stuff with cats, just three cats that happen to have our names.
Yeah.
Just in a game somewhere. That would be, you know, just something simple like that.
Just like with food bowls that they're eating out of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something like that. Right. It's time to move on to something rather large. It's the big discussion. It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion, which this week comes courtesy of Michael Milan, who says, with so much Last of Us Part 1 discussion lately, what do you feel are the qualifications for a remake? Both qualifications to become one, things like being well-loved, how old it is, and the qualifications to being a good remake. Things like honoring the original but providing a new experience. Would love to hear your thoughts. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Well, loved goes without saying. That's a good one. In terms of age, I was struggling with this. I was like, what's a good rule for age? And I think I've come up with one that I would be satisfied with. Don't know about everyone else. I think it should be preferably two generations old. In order to be remade.
I've written that as well.
Yeah.
Two console generations ago.
Yeah. I don't think that they should be remaking games for PS5 that were on PS4, for example. And in that, I don't think there should be any particularly recent remasters either, or remasters that still hold up very well today.
So what I'm hearing is you don't want The Last of Us Part 1.
I mean, it looks good and it's an excuse to play the game again because I would never sit down and put The Last of Us Remastered into my console and play it. Mm. But yeah, by my rules, I don't think this should actually be being made. I think it's a bit silly, to be honest. I think they know that people will play it, buy it, and they'll make money on it. And so it's a business decision. And fair enough, they're a business, but in terms of just what is a good reason to remake a game, I think no, that's not a good candidate. Do you guys want to do your qualifications first, and then
Yeah.
We can talk about what makes a good remake.
Obviously, like, the being well-loved thing is important. But I also do think that if a sequel comes out which has improved a lot of the game mechanics visually, like, and it's introducing a whole new generation and people can't necessarily go back and easily play the first iteration of the game, I think that that should be remade.
The, like, you know, Resident Evil.
Like Resident Evil, yeah, exactly. Like, I think that, you know, a lot of the people who've been really into Resident Evil now haven't necessarily had the opportunity to play 1 through 4, for example. So it's really good that they're being remade so that a whole new generation of gamers can experience them in a way that they are comfortable with playing games and it isn't frustrating for gamers who have learned these these controls growing up that now have to relearn, you know, the older controls that we've got. So a sequel does tend to help kind of encourage that a remake be made, which is obviously why they've kind of done The Last of Us Part 1, because they redid a lot of the gameplay in Part 2. Again, I don't know if enough, but that's a whole different thing. So I think that, like, if a sequel comes out and the first game is no longer accessible to the generation of gamers that want to play the sequel, then I think it should be remade so that people can play the first game to catch up on the second game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good.
Cool.
That's fine.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay. The energy's weird in here.
It is weird. There was that whole spider thing. It's really thrown me off.
Yeah, it's thrown me off as well. Dead Island 2, the spider is contorted in a really strange way.
Yeah, it's because Peter harassed him and now he's sad.
He's not contorted. He's always perfectly splayed out.
Is he?
Yeah, maybe it's just the angle you're at.
He's changed angle now.
I'm just worried about him, you know.
He's
all right.
The only thing I'm worried about is he might not get many flies in here.
There isn't many flies in here, but maybe that's because of him, because there's a lot of flies in the office. Yeah,
there's a vent over there. Mm. I assume that's how Dead Island 2 the Spider got in. Anyway, in terms of what qualifies for a remake, I think you are both absolutely right. It should be at least two console generations ago, maybe 10 to 15 years. The game has to have at least been good. I know we've spoken before about how it would be nice for remakes to focus on games that had a lot of promise, but that just completely bungled the execution. Mm. And, you know, they basically get another chance at it. But I think at that point, you might as well just reboot. You might as well just take that IP and reboot it rather than remake it, because it probably doesn't have a huge amount of name or brand recognition. So just
or similarity to the original if you've changed.
Yeah, if you're changing it that much, then yeah, absolutely. And it may well be that the writing was horrible, but the setting was cool, for example.
Troll and I.
Trelandi, yeah, Trelandi. Exactly. Yeah. Embracer Group.
Smells like
Botany. Smells like Botany. Embracer Group specifically will remake any old tripe. Mm. They don't care. They'll just remake anything, as has been seen most recently with Destroy All Humans, which I know has a sizable fan base. But those games were never reviewed particularly well or held in particularly high regard. So that's always baffled me. And the SpongeBob remake as well was a weird choice. Don't know why they did that. But I think there should be, in terms of my personal preference, in terms of interest especially, they should have a certain amount of appeal in terms of its critical reception and its belovedness by the people who played it at the time. Mm. You know, like the Klonoa remake, I think is a prime candidate, because not only are those games hard to come by, but also they probably aged quite a lot and people love those games. Yeah. They speak really highly of them. So that's a perfect
candidate. I've been wanting to play them on stream, just the original, like emulate the PS1 versions for ages. I was thinking like, oh, I must play that at some point. And then they announced the remake. I was like, oh, great. Perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One thing that bucks that rule, though, for me, in terms of the amount of time that's passed, is that so Resident Evil 1's GameCube remake didn't come out that long after the original Resident Evil came out on PS1. It was, what, a matter of 5 years, 5-6 years thereabouts, potentially? I don't know the specific dates, but certainly they're only one console generation separated. But at that time, could you call it... Were remakes really a thing at that point? They probably were. And is it technically a remake, or is it just a really nice port? Yeah, just like a from the ground up port, because it's not even on the same console family. I don't really know how that works, but I would quite like to see Resident Evil 1 remade now. We're in the engine, the creation. Is it the creation engine? No. What's it called? The RE engine? RE engine. Yeah. Creation Engines Bethesda. Yeah, the RE engine. I'd love to see Resi 1. As good as that GameCube remake is, I would love to see that tackled again.
Yeah, they're only 6 years apart. On Wii, it came out on the same day, 22nd of March. So it was like an anniversary thing.
On the Wii?
Sorry.
Are you doing Resi 4?
No, you're right, like GameCube.
Because yeah. Resi 4 wasn't that far for the... Oh, but the Wii wasn't a remake. That was
For some reason, I always think it's on the Wii, but it is on, that is accurate to the GameCube, okay. That information.
6 years. So yeah,
22nd
so that's,
of March, 6 years later.
That's probably one of the few times, I think, that nobody could disagree that that was a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's the second part of the question, Peter?
The second part was, what actually makes a good remake? So it's... It might have ticked all those boxes. It's worthy of a remake, but what should they do then? So I think, I mean, some of the stuff we kind of covered as a reason to remake a game in the first place. So I think like updated controls are a good thing, or maybe a completely kind of updated presentation a la Resident Evil. But I think in terms of controls, actually, it kind of depends on the genre to a certain extent, but it's always worth leaving in the option to go back to the old control scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Not all games do that. Not all remakes do that. But I am a big fan of that because it might be a game that you played that much when you were younger that you still have the muscle memory now. And you pick it up and you're like, can't play this anymore. I think the Master Chief Collection updated some Halo 1 controls that I tried to switch back. I'm trying to think. There's definitely been a couple of recent remakes.
Was Crash slightly different? But... Some of the timing was off on the jumping or something. I think
there was an issue with that. Was more of a hitbox issue, and I don't think it's necessarily something they could have like switched around.
Did they give you the option in the Spyro Reignited trilogy? Because wasn't there a little bit of a difference, or did I make that one up?
Yeah, there was a slight difference with like camera controls, I think.
Mm.
I'm not really sure. I can't think of like that many examples, but there are games that do and do not give you the option to switch back to original controls where they've changed them. I think it's nice when old cut content is reinserted, stuff that didn't make it because maybe there were technological issues or it was just decided this isn't appropriate. The thing that comes to mind, again, to go back to Crash Bandicoot, was the Stormy Ascent level that was... They waited like a couple of months and then released that as free DLC, and that was fun. Just a really difficult level for people to, you know, go back and play a bit more Crash. You know, and it helps from a business sense as well. Once people have sort of played through your game and maybe put it down, to be like, hey, remember our game? Go and play it again. Look, now there's a free level.
Mm.
That's a lot of fun. And it's always interesting to see stuff that was left on the cutting room floor, I think, with any game. Again, I like the option of having the original soundtrack being switched back. If they're doing like a remade soundtrack, I think it's nice if they've got the rights to do so, to leave the original on there. But then, yeah, something that I really do like, in particularly with Resident Evil as an example, is some deviation from the original story or even from the original level design. I think with the likes of a 3D platformer, it doesn't really make sense to do that. But with something that's got a bit more substance to it, like a Resident Evil, or, you know, even with The Last of Us, I would have been more interested if I to hear that The Last of Us remake was going to, you know, throw in some extra bits and bobs. And maybe they will, but what they've shown us so far is literally a side-by-side, here is like a shot-for-shot thing. So gameplay-wise, I suspect they've basically just remade every level as it was. But it would be really cool if they throw in some surprises. And it works very well in horror games in particular.
Yeah.
You're expecting certain jumps. They even did that in the Resi 1 remake with the dogs through the window.
Yep. Move the placement of enemies and items.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea. And then just quality of life touches, being able to pause or skip cutscenes, which you know, depending on how old the original game was that you're remaking, probably wasn't an option. Maybe less sort of archaic, artificial difficulty. You know, some games were just designed to be a grind because that's how games were done back then, and you know, you can remove things like that very easily nowadays. So yeah, those are some things that I think are good. Ashton.
Peter basically covered everything I was going to say, it's okay.
We maybe should have gone
it's fine.
Round and round.
I was just going to say, I don't think it needs to be a completely new experience. Like a lot of it, you were saying, there should be a lot of like what made the first game so good. And for those of people who have the nostalgia of the original game, should definitely still be able to be like, hey, I remember this. I know how to do this bit. Like, the back of my hand, but it is always nice, like you say, to add new bits in or change things around a little bit just to make sure that like there is something new and fresh. And it's like you say, especially with horror games, because you know those jump scares only work once, so if they're suddenly in a different place, then they're extra spooky sometimes,
and it raises the tension when you get to it
and it doesn't happen. Yeah,
so not only does the developer get the benefit of still giving you the jump scare because you don't know when it's happening, but they also raise the tension
or get you to let your guard down because you know it's going to happen and it doesn't, and then you walk and you're like, oh
yeah,
nothing. I guess they must have removed that, and then 2 seconds later they make you jump. So yeah, it doesn't have to be a completely new experience, but I do think they have to like mix it up a little bit. I think, like I was saying with the sequel, if there is gameplay that has been polished and like really well done in a game that's more recent, then it is really nice to kind of bring those mechanics into the new game so that people who have played the sequel recently don't have to be like, oh yeah, I can't do that in this game. I have to go back and remember that this is a different game. But yeah, I think everything Peter said is pretty much what I had to say. But yeah, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I have a couple. I don't think Peter said enough, quite frankly.
Whoa.
No, the Resi 2 is like the gold standard, isn't it? Yeah. For remakes in terms of changing things up. And that is really what all remakes should strive for. But you're right in that horror games have an advantage over regular games because they can really subvert expectations in a spooky way.
And people want that more, in a way.
Yeah, they do. They want to be scared in the same but different kind of way. You're absolutely bang on about control schemes as well, giving people the option to go back. But I would like to emphasize how important it is to modernize control schemes in these games, particularly in the upcoming Resi 4 remake, because I could not get on with those controls. Like I probably could and should have stuck with it and I would have gotten used to it. But with that knowledge that the remake was coming, I just thought, I'll wait. I'll wait until I get the remade experience with modernized things, because games have come so far, especially if we're sticking to our rules of two console generations. Games have come a long way from where they were, especially those being remade. So things do need to be modernized and brought up to the current day standards. So while it's nice to include an option to revert to original controls if people want, it still has to be accessible for modern players, because otherwise why wouldn't they just go back and play the original?
Yeah.
Another thing that you said, Ashton, you know, it's important that maybe the games being remade are occasionally games that you can't really get access to anymore.
Yeah.
So that's, again, why these things should be updated, really. Something that would be really nice for a remake is, as well as cut content and additional stuff, maybe some sort of museum mode. I know a lot of like the Disney game collections have all sorts of screenshots and artwork and that kind of stuff included in there that you can go in and look at, and behind the scenes stuff and you know, talking heads and documentaries, all that kind of stuff I think is super interesting. And if you're going to remake a game, you're celebrating it. That's the whole point. And you should really try and make that the definitive version of that game, so that hopefully we've reached the point now in the games industry where we are no longer going to lose access to games that are coming out now. Like PS4 games are, you know, they're backwards compatible on PS5 and same on Xbox and so on. Like, we've reached a point now, hopefully, where every single system going forwards, for as long as we have systems, will be able to play these games and onwards. And hopefully they'll work out backwards compatibility. But that does mean that these remakes should aim to be the best, most definitive, final version of these games that ever need to be made, because people will always be able to come back and play this remake.
Yeah.
So they need to have everything in them that people could possibly want. And I just think it would be so nice if The Last of Us Part 1 had loads of extra stuff in it. I don't know if it does, but as you pointed out and as you asked about, Ashton, I think by all of our metrics, The Last of Us Part 1 doesn't really need to exist. and is a bit of a big ask.
But we're probably all going
to
play it.
Probably still all going to play it, yeah, because I'm, you know, I like that game and I would like to play it again. It's just The Last of Us as a brand is so toxic at the moment. You can't really go near it, so it's tough.
I wish I hadn't have just played the remake, the remaster, because I'd literally finished that like the last few months.
Right.
Yeah. So now I'm like, oh, I don't want to play again because I've literally just finished the game.
I've not played it in maybe since I might have only played it once actually. Mm. I might have played it twice, but yeah, it's been years and years since I played The Last of Us 1.
I'm glad that it's been in lockdown. Mm. I'm glad that it's doing well. Like the early reviews are really positive, but like they weren't going to be negative. They had to do a lot for this game to come back and be like, it's only a 50.
It's
like
bad.
We've seen what they can do.
Well, they managed it with GTA.
But they've got the engine built from The Last of Us Part 2. You know, they've not had to like as necessarily like GTA remake because that was just a whole mess. Like they haven't had to kind of like get an AI in to do it. They've already got the team that've been working on it who know the face shapes of the characters who've been like working on the other game. So they kind of would have had to really, really balls it up for it to go anywhere below like at least a 90 because it's just, the game was already really good and did really well. How are you going to mess it up so bad? Mm. So
GTA was just, sorry to be anal, but GTA was more of a remaster.
It was a remaster.
And I would love to see that if they just thought, you know what, for a laugh, let's remaster the remaster of The Last of Us 1. Using AI techniques and just see what weird stuff gets spit out.
But in a way, it's almost more unforgivable that GTA was a remaster. So the fact that The Last of Us can be remade from the ground up and, you know, that takes a lot more work and a lot more resources and seemingly come out a 90% plus game compared to just remastering Grand Theft Auto, basically just doing new models and textures. That's sort of it.
Mm.
I mean, I'm no developer. I'm sure there's more to it than that, but there's no excuse for that game.
No. That's just hysterical. It's so funny. I have it as well. I need to play it at some point. Or do I? Do I need to play it? I do own San Andreas, the original PS4 remaster that they released beforehand, which is arguably the better version.
Yeah.
But there we are. That's our big discussion. That's the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know what you think in the comments below and at various places around the internet. Peter's going to tell you some of them right now.
YouTube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. You can go to both of those places to see our video and live stream content. When we're live streaming on both YouTube and Twitch, we are modded by Lob Rotovich, Trailing Badger, and Mr. Black. Thank you, mods. If you've got Amazon Prime, part of the whole bundle there includes a Twitch sub, so you can spend that on us if you like. We've got a Twitter and Facebook. That's twitter.com and facebook.com/TeamTripleJump. You can see our video and live stream announcements, legacy video content, little bits of posts and things where we're saying, hey, weird news, question mark. Hey, questions for this thing, question mark.
Mm-hmm.
TikTok.com/@TeamTripleJump. It's where our ticks and talks are posted. And Patreon.com/TeamTripleJump is our Patreon. There are lots of rewards on there. You can have a listen to the second podcast, which we're about to record. After this, it's very exciting. And early worst games ever, weirdest games ever, all those sorts of things. So,
absolutely.
We have a website. It's tripleju.mup. That's tripleju.mp. It spells jump. It's very clever. If you want to join our Discord, you can go to tripleju.mup/Discord and hang out with a wonderful community. On Discord, we're modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Hollow Eyes. And if it tells you to do something, bloody well do it. If you want to listen to the podcast in its audio forms, maybe you're off to Wales for that wrestling thing that's happening, Clash of the Castle.
Wow, well done.
Why not go to tripleju.mup/podcast? We can keep you company on your journey. If you want to watch one of our live stream VODs, if you've missed one of our live streams during the week, you can go to tripleju.mup/VODs. If you want to book us for a cameo, maybe you've got a birthday coming up, why not go to tripleju.mup/cameo and we'll record you a little video message. Mm. If you want to buy some sick and cool merch, like this, like this, like this, not this one.
Not this one.
You can go to triplejumpshop.com and make sure you're following @triplejumpshop on Twitter for the latest merch announcements.
That was good. That sounded like a train tannoy.
Thank you. Merch announcements.
Follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter at ThatPeterAustin and at ScrambledAshton, and myself just on Twitter at Confused_Dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Thursday being the joint stream.
Blaze it.
On YouTube, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday being solo streams on Twitch. What Skips Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everybody else. The podcast is every Saturday. We do shows all the bloody time. Why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. There are two big things out this week because I scheduled one while you were off yesterday.
Right.
That being Rules Boss. He's back.
Oh, yes. It's good. Yeah.
Oh.
Did you know this?
I didn't know. Nobody tells me anything.
It's on a need-to-know basis.
I find things out on this podcast and on this podcast only. Every week is a new thing that happens.
Basis. It's a great one, though. It's a really good Rules Boss. Yeah. Kieran did a great job with the edit. Ashton was a real trooper with the challenge.
Yeah.
You want to know what it is? Well, it's already out, actually, so it's no spoiler. What is it, Ashton?
I played Switch Sports Tennis, but I attached the Joy-Con to my head, and I tried to play tennis with my head. Which is seemingly easy, but actually quite difficult.
Yeah. Bit of a challenge. So very funny, though.
Yeah. Hopefully.
How's your head? Is that okay? Because you recorded it last week.
Yeah. I still have a headache, but I don't know if that's just from other things. but I think I've rattled a few brain cells out. So
good.
That'll be fine.
So you'll be better at it next time, is what I'm hearing. And there's also Worst Games Ever out, Peter.
It's a really good one. We recorded it, was it yesterday? No, I wasn't in yesterday.
2 days ago, yeah. Tuesday, yeah.
We recorded just recently, and James Jenkins, I'm hoping, will have turned it around in time. He will have done. He's a dedicated boy.
He is.
It turned out really well. We actually had, I'm going to, actually, no, I won't say that. But it's really good. Yeah. So go and watch it. It's already out now for patrons.
As is Weirdest Games Ever, which are coming out next week for everyone else, but it's out on Patreon now.
And Worst Games Ever is out for everybody else tomorrow. I won't say what it is.
Okay.
Ooh, okay.
It's a good one. You should go and watch it.
Maybe I will say what it is because people might be more likely to click it, actually.
Okay.
It's Gadget and the Gadgetinis. Not Inspector Gadget.
No.
Just Gadget for reasons. It is Inspector Gadget, the character, but it's not called Inspector Gadget.
He's lost his PC license.
For reasons you will discover in the episode.
Yeah. He had to hand in his badge and gun, and he's no longer.
He did. And his hat and his comical boxing glove.
In his whole body, basically. Yeah. He's just a head now. wonderful. Well, go watch all that amazing content coming out this weekend. Thank you so much for listening once again. And Peter, there's just enough time to run through this week's sponsor again.
Are you sick of decorating rooms quickly in GTA?
Yeah.
Well, you can play a worse game. It's called Paint Slow. Play it.
It's good.
It's really good.
Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye. Bye.
So woke.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.